Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Nolan is standing by.
Hey, Wacky Bruce!
Coming to you from an undisclosed location, this is the Bruce Exclusive. And here's your host, Bruce Nolan.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to another edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. Another Buffalo Bills season comes to a close, and the offseason begins. You know, there's an old speechwriting tenet that I have a tendency to follow. If it ever feels like I'm repeating myself a little bit, I would like to go ahead and give you insight as to why that is. There is an old speechwriting tenet that says that the structure of any good speech is to tell them what you're going to tell them what you want to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. It's very similar to having like an opening statement that summarizes high level all your points, and then you go into the meat of what you want to say, and then there's a recap at the end. Tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them what you want to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. Those are the three steps to speech writing. If you listen, we are coming up on American political season. If you listen to speech writing, there is an element of that to it. People who write speeches for political candidates have a tendency to do that. And so if it ever sounds like I'm repeating myself a little bit, it's because of that. Now, the first part of that is tell them what you're going to tell them. So what I want to do right off the bat is I kind of want to tackle exactly the type of world that we are going to live in this offseason. And by I say we, I mean the people who are going to consume this podcast. I'm going to tell you the world that I'm going to live in here and that y'all are going to voluntarily come into when you listen to my show. Unless, of course, this is some sort of form of torture and you are being held against your will, being forced to listen to my show, in which case I apologize. I'm sorry that this is so torturous for you, but I appreciate the click. So, the place we're going to live this offseason is at the intersection of could and should. Usually, the longer you go with a level of frustration, the more drastic your potential solutions become. The longer you get stuck in a hole, the further the lengths are that you are willing to go to try to get out of the hole. And so what happens is the ideas for how it is best to right the ship for the Buffalo Bills, how you get over the hump, however you take the next step, whatever euphemism you'd like to use to describe increased levels of success, whatever it is that you think is necessary, the ideas for that are going to get bigger and crazier this offseason. Where I'm going to live is at the intersection of what could happen and what should happen. In that order. So first we will take all the things that we believe are feasible. And as you know from any number of discussions we've had on this podcast before, feasible is very broad. It's football. Not anything can happen, but a lot of stuff can happen. So that encompasses all the things that could happen. And then from there will be another sub discussion about the things that should happen. But one of those Venn diagrams has to overlap with the other. What should happen has to fall within what could happen. So here's what we're not going to do. We're not going to spend any time at all talking about firing Sean McDermott. None. Because it's not going to happen. Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean had their press conference today. The Bills are not going to fire Sean McDermott. If they do, I will take the gigantic L associated with that take. But they're not going to do it this offseason. It's not going to happen. So I'm not going to go down the road as to whether or not they should, because it's not in the feasibility of whether or not they could. It's not something that I believe can happen, so it's not something I'm going to bother opining on whether or not it should happen. And there are discussions out there about manifestation, that the idea that you can will it to could. I had a conversation on social media about that not too long ago. Somebody said to me, Bruce, start a movement. We need it to be too loud to ignore. People see social media. Social media has impact on people's lives. If you make enough noise, it'll bleed into reality. I need you to understand this as my listeners. And I understand that this can be a difficult pill to swallow sometimes because it requires a level of humility. The amount of power that you wield over the Buffalo Bills' actions is basically zero. I understand that that is uncomfortable for people as consumers of a product, but your ability to influence their actions is essentially zero. I have a podcast. I have a platform. I have a voice. My ability to influence the Buffalo Bills is basically zero. I have said this before when the conversation came around the media holding the team accountable. And I said, the media doesn't hold the team accountable. Do you know who holds the team accountable? The fans in mass. We would need thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people to stop going to games. And we would need those seats to be empty. No one else would buy them, right? Overwhelming empty seats. And even then, the overwhelming majority of the money that they make comes from TV revenue. It is so frustrating to want something to change and to know that you can't change it, but I need you to accept it because you can't move forward. You're stuck. You got this wall that won't let you progress to any other part of the offseason because you're still stuck on, they need to fire Sean McDermott. Well, they're not going to. So knowing that, and knowing that that is what we consider a mathematical constant, we now have to build around it. If you keep banging your head against the constant, you're not going to get anything else about the equation correct. Because it's the constant. You can't change anything about it. It is immutable. And so I'm not going to deal with that for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, when I could be dealing with other stuff. Because the Buffalo Bills are not going to fire Sean McDermott. So because it doesn't fall into the first category of feasibility, something that could happen, the fact that I could even have an opinion on whether or not it should happen doesn't matter. My opinion on whether or not it should doesn't matter because it doesn't first qualify as something that could happen. So we're not going to talk about firing Sean McDermott because it's not going to happen. And neither you nor I have any control over that. I know people think that I make the running joke that I'm a nobody. It's like false humility. It's not. I'm an actual nobody. I am essentially an insignificant speck in the Bills universe. And that's okay. That means I can't change anything. That's all right. The Bills aren't going to behave a different way because I, or you, or hundreds of you on social media all think a specific thing. They're not going to. And that's okay. That just lets us get to acceptance faster so we can move on and talk about other things that do fall under the spectrum of things that could happen. And some people say, well, that they want criticism. Well, I want criticism. I want criticism from the media. I want criticism from the fans. Be very careful because this is the season for calling things what they aren't. After a frustrating loss, after a couple years of frustrating playoff exits, this is the time where people will conflate the word criticism with rage. They don't want criticism. They want rage. Those are not the same things. be very careful when you are interacting with other fans right now that they are calling something what it actually is. I'm critical of the team. You should be critical of the team. No, you don't want me to be critical. You want me to be full of rage. There's a difference. Be very, very careful. This is the time. We should be critical. We should always be critical. We should have fair criticism, but we should be critical when there are things to criticize. But people are asking you for criticism. They might not be asking you for that. They're asking you for rage. Don't fall for it. Don't fall in the trap that anger and criticism conflate. They don't. They don't. You can be angry without criticism, and you can have criticism without anger. Those two things are completely separate. One of them is a logical construct, and the other is an emotional construct. They are not related. Do not let people conflate them this time of year. You know, this is going to be a second podcast in a row where I have talked about one of my favorite shows of all time. And I'm actually going to talk about two. So last week I talked about The Good Place, and I mentioned that it is my favorite television program of all time. But I'd like to talk to you about two of my other favorite shows, and specifically the differences between them. My wife and I like How I Met Your Mother. We enjoy that as a sitcom. We thought it was funny. We've watched it back through a couple times. We have some running gags that are based on things from that show. It's a funny show. We like it. It's entertaining. We also like a show that was on FX called You're the Worst. And I'm going to go ahead and put a caveat right here. If you are a parent listening to this show, You're the Worst is not appropriate for your children at all. Do not turn it on with a child in the room saying, oh, well, Bruce said this was a good show. Don't do that. It is not appropriate for children. I do not want to put you in a bad place. So that's my personal opinion. You might find it to be incredibly appropriate for children. But as far as the content, I think most people who would put things in tiers as far as the levels of appropriateness for children would probably not put that one as being meaningfully appropriate for children. So with that caveat noted, there is a very significant difference between the way I view You're the Worst and the way I view How I Met Your Mother. And it comes down to this. They're both good shows. The reason why You're the Worst always ends up ahead of How I Met Your Mother on my list is because You're the Worst is clutch. Bruce, how can a TV show be clutch? You're the Worst and How I Met Your Mother both tackle meaningful issues in their shows. You're the Worst, when it has a moment that it absolutely has to get right, it gets right every single time. When there is a pivotal moment, it's a series finale, it's a season finale, it's a big emotional beat, it's a specific heavy topic that they're tackling. Every time you're in a writer's room and you think to yourself, we absolutely have to nail this scene. We have to nail every bit of dialogue, every bit of inflection. The directors are like, no, this absolutely has to work. It works. When they're talking about mental health, it works. When they do season finales, it works. When they have those incredibly sweet moments where you're like, I need you as a viewer to connect with this moment and see that these two very, very broken people are trying. They're trying. They don't know how to do it. They're not very good people, but they're trying. Every single time, the show absolutely has to get the moment right. It gets the moment right. It's clutch. Overall, in all of those non-clutch moments, they're very similar as far as enjoyment level for me. They're not similar content, but they're very similar as far as enjoyment level, how much I actually like watching them. But when those big moments come, You're the Worst gets it right every single time. How I Met Your Mother, on the other hand, has been criticized pretty significantly for the way that they wrapped up that show. And I have my own issues with the last season and the way they wrapped it up. And it's a shame because they built to that moment for such a significant amount of time. And then for a lot of people, they had a lot of issues with the way that the ending was handled. And it kind of sours everything. Does this sound familiar to anybody else? It just goes to show you that the way you're going to look at the whole overall is kind of based on the way you look at the ending. And those gigantic moments that you absolutely have to get right. I really like How I Met Your Mother. It will never be over You're the Worst for me, because I have to find a way to distinguish that. I have to find a way to split hairs if I'm tiering or if I'm ranking something. And it's always going to come back to the fact that You're the Worst always gets the clutch moments right. And How I Met Your Mother doesn't. That came to me as I was thinking about the Buffalo Bills. And right now, the Buffalo Bills' last couple of years have been How I Met Your Mother. I still enjoy that show. I'm not going to poo-poo that show. I'll watch it again. But there's always going to be that thing in the back of my mind that goes, yeah, it was a great show, but. Yeah, it was a good season, but. I wish it would have been a little better. I wish it would have been a little more clutch. When Tyler Bass misses a field goal, that's clutch. It's a missed opportunity. These things happen. When 13 seconds happen, wasn't very clutch. And I think that there's a lesson for me to learn there. And that is, I still enjoy How I Met Your Mother. But I'm not going to objectively look at it as a better show for me than You're the Worst, because one of those things is clutch and the other one's not. And it comes down to execution in those moments, in those directorial moments, in those writer's room moments, in those special teams moments, dropping a pass when you shouldn't drop a pass. These are the things that are going to separate your favorite shows from shows you just really like. They're the things that are going to separate really good teams from the teams that go to the Super Bowl. That's how thin the margin is, because something has to give. You have to find a way to delineate between your second and third favorite show. If I hold a gun to your head and say, you got to tell me what your second favorite show is and your third favorite show is, and you're down to two, you have to find a way to draw the line between them. There isn't going to be ties in the NFL playoffs. That's not how it works. Something has to draw the line. It's clutch. It's whether or not you're clutch. And so just like You're the Worst in How I Met Your Mother, so too are the teams that are clutch and are getting to championship games, getting to Super Bowls, and the Buffalo Bills, who have fallen short in those areas. I can still enjoy the season. I can still look back fondly on it. It doesn't ruin it for me. It just becomes a yeah, but. We are going to take a quick break. Stick with me. We'll be right back.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for joining me for this edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. We talked about could and should. We talked about rage and criticism. We talked about you're the worst, how much your mother, and being clutch. And now we're going to talk about the offensive game plan, which has gotten a lot of talk, a lot of pub for the Buffalo Bills against the Kansas City Chiefs. And there's specific aspects of it that I want to talk about. As with most things that we've talked about in this podcast, I have criticism for specific items and defenses of specific other items. It's not all good or all bad. There are specific things that I didn't like, and I'll tell you why. There are specific things I'm going to defend, and I'll tell you why. The run the ball on second and short, I didn't enjoy. The Buffalo Bills ran the ball on second and short quite a bit. That one, I'm going to criticize. The offensive game plan that resulted in many short passes, that one I'm going to defend. So there's a specific aspect of the game plan that I don't like, and there's a specific aspect of the game plan I'm going to defend. It's not all or one. It's not the game plan sucked or the game plan was good. Let's start with the criticism first. The Buffalo Bills struggled to generate explosive plays against the Kansas City Chiefs. Part of that is because receivers dropped passes. Josh Allen put three really, really good balls deep down the field into receivers' hands who dropped them. But even if those three had been completed, that was still three explosive plays. It probably wasn't good enough. You wanted more opportunities at that. Do you know when a good opportunity to get shots at that is? Second and short. Second and short is one of the best opportunities to attempt an explosive play. Specifically, out of 12 personnel under center, Buffalo Bills continued to be effective passing the ball out of 12 personnel like they have been all year. They were the third best passing offense out of 12 personnel in the entire league. We talked about this earlier this year. It seems counterproductive. It seems counterintuitive. Pass out of heavy, run out of light. Pass out of 12. And I understand Knox getting banged up messes with that a little bit. But if you were struggling to generate explosive plays, there were second half plays where they ran the ball on second and short into a loaded box. That would have been a good time to take another shot. The box numbers were not in your favor, and you had a little bit of freedom when it comes to the down and distance. Those were your opportunities to try and generate more explosive plays down the field, and you didn't do it. I understand you want to get the first down. The Bills did arguably as good against the Chiefs defense as anyone has all year long. I cannot get on board with the idea that in totality, the offense wasn't good enough. Relative to the other offenses that have played the Chiefs defense this year, you could make a strong argument that nobody did it better than the Buffalo Bills did. But there was still meat on the bone. There was still opportunity there. I did not like that aspect of the offensive game plan, especially in the second half, where you had the data to know that you weren't getting the explosive plays that you wanted. You could have said, okay, if it's second and short, we're in heavier personnel, they got a loaded box, we can take a shot now. We have a little bit of breathing room in the down and distance. We can do it. And they didn't. And I think that they missed out on an opportunity for more explosive plays because they didn't specifically in the second half. But throwing short, I don't think that was part of the game plan at all. Watch the All-22 back, and I know there was a big discussion, meaningful, about the amount of passes that were thrown short of 10 yards. And at the end of the day, only six passes were thrown past 10 yards for the Buffalo Bills. That, I can tell you right now, from watching the tape, that was not the plan. Because there were route concepts where the primary was down the field and the Chiefs just said, we will dip farther into zone coverage. We will play farther off. We will do what we have to do to see to it that Josh Allen throws into bad looks, throws into heavy coverage. And he consistently made the patient decision, which is hilarious. Because if you think about these two games as bookends of the season, do you remember the Jets week one where we were begging him to just play within the offense and you're going to be able to make a couple crazy Josh Allen plays every game? That's what happened. This is the inverse of that. So you can look at this and say the plan wasn't downfield focused enough. I look at this and say you need better downfield weapons. You need for them to not be able to take that away from you as easily. You need people who are so dynamic with the ball in their hands that when Josh Allen ends up taking the smart move and throwing it short, you can punish them for doing that and have to pull them up so that you can take shots down the field. I want someone who can simultaneously be explosive downfield and with the ball in their hands. That's what I want. So I arrive at something needs to change, just like you do, but I arrive at a different thing that needs to change. Because you watch the route concepts, there's stuff down the field. That's where his primary is. Chiefs took it away. I would like it to be more difficult for the Chiefs to take it away. And to do that, I want to add explosive dynamism to the Buffalo Bills receiving core this offseason. The passing chart that was going around with Josh Allen, it shows you what did happen. It doesn't show you what could have happened, and it doesn't show you what the plan is. You cannot look at a scatter chart that shows the passes that were completed and attempted and come up logically with what the plan was. It doesn't show you routes or coverages. It only shows you what did happen. It doesn't show you what could have happened or what should have happened. There's that intersection again. Could and should. It's results-based thinking. Do you remember that Josh Allen fumbled the ball and almost didn't even let Tyler Bass attempt the kick on that final drive and was saved by an amazing individual effort by Spencer Brown? Do you remember that? You probably forgot about it. Why? Because you were only worried about the result. And the result is he didn't turn it over. Do you have any idea what the narrative would be like if Josh Allen wouldn't have had that fumble recovered by Spencer Brown and the Chiefs would have gotten it? You're driving down to try and tie the game and you fumbled it. Then the narrative would be Josh Allen's not clutch. Played good all game. Doesn't matter. It's a results-based thinking. The exact same logic applies to the scatter chart. That just shows you where he threw the ball. It doesn't show you where he wanted to throw the ball. It doesn't show you what the plan was to throw the ball. It just shows you what happened. Not all 2-yard runs are the same. Not all 10-yard passes are the same. And not all scatter charts are indicative of the same plan. You got to watch the film for that. Speaking of watching the film, I praised Sean McDermott multiple times for being able to piece together a defense out of duct tape and baling wire over the last couple of weeks. Works great when it's the Steelers. A lot different when it's Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Travis Kelce. It's just not the same. You're down to your final second-level defenders, and the ones that you've got are still banged up. Tyrell Dodson, banged up. Rasul Douglas, banged up. This is what happens. So yeah, I can simultaneously give him credit for being able to piece together a defense out of duct tape and baling wire over the last couple of weeks and know that it wasn't going to be good enough against the Kansas City Chiefs. I mentioned it last week that the Bills were trending in an opposite direction, the Kansas City Chiefs, when it comes to health. And it was an opportunity for a legacy game because of that hand being tied behind your back. So I can't say that last week and then not acknowledge the factors that I acknowledged last week this week. When is it going to be our turn? Is a thing that's been going around a lot recently. And I want to kind of address that specific point. When is it going to be our turn? If you've been following this podcast for any meaningful amount of time, you'll know the last year was tough for Mrs. Nolan and I. I had not one, but two cancer scares in the last year personally. And I remember thinking when I was going through this and going through job change and going through all this stuff at the same time, I thought to myself, when is it going to be my turn? I saw these good things happening for other people and my wife and I would talk about it and we'd allow ourselves to be frustrated in those moments and we'd say, when is it going to be our turn? Like, when do we get to have that? When do we get to have things go our way? When is it the Nolan's turn for this? But I've mentioned before on this podcast that the number one thing that correlates with happiness is gratitude. And gratitude never comes from looking forward. It only ever comes from looking back. You can't be grateful for something that hasn't happened yet. So I'm trying to spend a lot of my time thinking about the past, trying to think a lot about where we've come from, what we went through. And that makes me very grateful. And when I'm grateful, I'm happier. So I wanted to share that with you. It's a really short point, but it might be helpful that if you want to feel happier, now you might not want to. You might want to rage, as mentioned earlier, and that's fine. I don't think it's healthy, but okay. You go. But if you want to, the happiness comes from the gratitude, because those two things correlate very significantly together. And gratitude doesn't come from looking forward. It doesn't come from saying, when is it going to be our turn? Because that implies that you're only going to be happy when that thing happens to you. Because if you're only ever going to be grateful when that thing happens to you, then you're going to have a hard time being happy because you won't be grateful. So just a little side note there. It's just something that I've been really trying to be mindful of this year, and I thought it might be helpful if I shared it with you all. We've got emails to get to. Andy says, the season comes down to dropped passes. That's all. Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest takeaways is that the Bills need more receiving help. And you guys know this. We've been talking about this for a long time. I want more receiving help too. I wanted it last year. I'm glad we got Dalton Kincaid. That's a good step. Let's keep going. And specifically the type of receiving help that I'm looking for is someone who's explosive down the field and someone who's explosive with the ball in their hands. And it's going to be really important that we talk about this. It's not just about being fast. Being fast is good. That contributes to that. But there are plenty of explosive players who are 4-5 runners and plenty of players that I don't want on my team who run 4-4. So fast enough, explosive enough, but ultimately I want the best player. But I think stylistically speaking, that's the type of player I would want that would help. Someone who's explosive down the field and someone who's explosive with the ball in their hands. Tom says, Bruce, thank you for getting me through the season. My only complaint is I wish your content was available more than once a week. I love both your insight and manner in which you look at things through a different prism, something I appreciate more and more in the increasingly cynical sports universe. Tonight was a bitter pill to swallow. I lived through much as a 50-something Bills fan. This loss, however, was possibly the most difficult since the 91 Super Bowl, because tonight, as was the case that first fateful wide right evening in Tampa, I firmly believed that we were the better team. Of the most recent disappointments, this one will haunt me the most. The injuries, so untimely and so gutting. The drops, the missed read to Diggs, followed by the missed throw to Shakir, the missed tackles, the 44-yard missed field goal. Most of all, however, I'm a bit haunted by what we're about to lose. The Poyer and Hyde tandem defined the culture that McDermott built in Buffalo. Gabe Davis, whose disappearance baffled us at times, gave us the highest of highs in 2021 and at numerous other times throughout his career. Two, if not all three, will likely be gone. There are others. We'll recover, and with Josh Allen at quarterback, we'll always be in the hunt, but the team as we know it appears ready to turn the page to a new chapter, one that should make everyone in Bills Mafia not just nostalgic, but nervous. Bean has a massive task ahead of him for sure. He's the best in the business, and I trust he'll bring in a new generation of players who, I hope, will represent us capably and proudly as the aforementioned have. Godspeed to him and you, Bruce, for all you do. Tom. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that very much. I will say one thing I want to add. I don't necessarily think they should be nervous about the change. And I'll tell you why. If we already established that Sean McDermott being here in 2024 is a constant, they're not going to fire him. Shouldn't we want a little bit of turnover? Shouldn't we want a little bit of new blood? Shouldn't we want a little bit of change? Because with every single one of those new faces, there comes a possibility that they are a superstar who helps launch the Buffalo Bills to the spot we all want them to be. What if we draft a Puka Nacua next year? That would change a lot, would it not? If you're going to have the same head coach and maybe the same offensive coordinator and maybe the same defensive play caller who's the coach, we should embrace that. We should embrace the new faces. We should embrace the opportunity to inject new blood. Buffalo Bills could have 10 draft picks once they get a third for Tremaine Edmonds. Think about all the situations this year that are different than last year as far as slot wide receiver. Khalil Shakir, we're excited about him. Defensive tackle, Ed Oliver took a step up. Linebacker, Terrell Bernard became a star. New isn't necessarily always better. And new isn't necessarily always worse. But it has the opportunity to be better. It might not be. The Buffalo Bills could regress next year. They could fill up these spots and have these new faces and they don't come around. They sign a couple free agent busts. They draft some players who don't turn out quite the way they wanted to early on. Or it could be something even better. But I think if you're going to have what detractors would call stagnation at the head coaching position, the GM position, the offensive coordinator position, potentially, the defensive play caller position, then wouldn't it be nice to get some variables other ways, other places in the roster? That's the way I'm looking at it. And I'm excited for this offseason. I'm excited about new blood. I'm excited about 10 draft picks. I hope he doesn't trade them all away to trade up. Although I could see a trade up in the first round for a receiver. I could see that happening. Patrick says, hi, Bruce. In the aftermath of Sunday's loss to the Chiefs, what are your biggest takeaway? Looking ahead, what do you think of Benford moving to safety? He understands the scheme, physical, good tackler, ball hawk. I say this with expectations that Douglas will be in the plans next year. Tre'Davious White's going to return at one point. Elam will develop, and Hyde Poyer or both will not be on the roster. I'm not as interested in moving Benford now as I was previously because he's a starter. They traded for Douglas. I don't think you can really count on Tre'Davious White at this point. ACL and Achilles injuries in almost back-to-back years. I mean, right after each other, just starting to get used to feeling good, starting to play like himself again, then bam, Achilles. Those don't typically turn out well. So I'm not going to operate under the assumption that I'm going to move Benford away because Tre'Davious White's coming back. I'm also not going to operate under the assumption that Kyrie Elam is going to be a starter level player. So if you had what I believe to be three clear-cut starter caliber contributors, then I would think about that. But I don't think you do. I think you have two, Benford and Douglas. The other two are question marks. And I don't like moving people away from spots and then creating more question marks because we also don't know if it'll be a clean transition. So you're moving Benford, who I think is a really good player. You're moving him from corner to safety, which then creates a question mark at safety because you don't know if he's going to be good or not. And you're inserting a question mark behind him. So I'm not in favor of it right now. Now the construct of the roster could look very different in a couple months, and I could be on board, but right now, I wouldn't be. As far as takeaways, we're going to go into a lot of that moving forward. There will be oh so many takeaways. Vince Taylor says he wants me to know that he's out on paying running backs too. He said he'd let Cook walk as good as he is. If he would stay for $4 to $5 million, I'd be interested in it. I'm not going to take the chance a replacement is immediately up to par, but I'm always fine with drafting a late round guy and tying his production to the offensive line. Yeah, I'm telling you right now, you guys are going to hate me when the time comes to pay James Cook and the market for a running back is $12 or $13 million a year. And I'm going to say, no, don't do that. Because everybody thinks that they want to take that don't pay running back stance until it's your running back. Then it's different. Then it's, well, he's an offensive weapon. Oh, well, he's a pass catcher. It's different. This guy's different, though. All the other guys, that was all fine, but this guy's different. I'm still going to say, no, I don't want to pay him, and everyone's going to hate me. Everyone was fine with that when it was Devin Singletary, but they won't be okay with it when it's James Cook, who's a more explosive player than Devin Singletary. So just be ready to hate me for that, because it's going to happen. Final plurality pie of the season. For the loss, defensive line, 16%. You were healthy. You were needed. you were absent. Second level injuries, 12%. What are you going to do? You don't have basically anybody healthy. Taron Johnson coming back from concussion was great, but you got guys coming off the couch to try and call the defense. It is what it is. Receiving core, 12%. Trent Sherfield, Stephon Diggs, wasn't good enough. You need more. Sean McDermott, 5%. Fake punt? Really? Early this year, my main criticism with Sean McDermott was in moments where he absolutely had to have it, he was aggressive with things that weren't Josh Allen. He did it again in that moment. I said last week, hey, look at that. When he had to have it, he went with Josh Allen. I said with Miami, hey, look at that. When he had to have it, he went with Josh Allen. And now, when he had to have it, he decided to be aggressive on special teams. And it wasn't because they had 10 men on the field. That was a called fake punt. And he was trying to be aggressive. He's not lying when he says, I was trying to be aggressive. But you weren't being aggressive with the best part of your team. You were being aggressive with a part of your team that has struggled all year long. Special teams have not been good this year. You got to get 5 yards. Unicorn of a quarterback? Nah. Fake punt with DeMar Hamlin. If you want to be aggressive, that's fine. Just go for it. I would have been infinitely more supportive. Go for it. Put the ball in the hands of your unicorn quarterback. I have a meaningful problem. It's the exact same criticism I had when they were 6-6 and we had this conversation. I said, that's my concern with Sean McDermott. And it came up again. And I'm going to criticize him again for it. I criticize him. And then he did it really well. And I said, hey, got to give credit while credit's due. And they did it again. Now we're going to criticize him again. That's how fair criticism works. You have a stance that you believe there's a specific way something should be done. And when something falls in it, you go, yay. And when something falls out of it, you go, boo. That's how it works. He did it again. And he gets a piece of plurality pie for it. Tyler Bass, 5%. One of the biggest kicks of your career. You missed it. And I haven't felt good. I mean, when he started to warm up and he was like, okay, Tyler Bass kicks the game-winning field goal. Did you feel good about it? The entire game I was cringing when he would kick an extra point. Just hoping it would go through. Did anything look easy or pure? No, it looked difficult. I didn't love it. Was not a fan. Defensive line, 16%. Second level injuries, 12%. Receiving core, 12%. Sean McDermott, 5%. Tyler Bass, 5%. Other, 50%. The final plurality pie of the season has come out of the oven and has been cut up into slices, as oddly shaped as they may be. We did the thing. We talked about all the things we wanted to talk about. You notice I didn't start off by telling you I thought this was going to be a short one because I knew it wasn't going to be. And it ended up not being a short one. I think it'll be a little shorter this offseason. Offseason pods have a tendency to be a little shorter unless we get into something heavily philosophical. Stick with me. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. Might have some surprises up my sleeve. Offseason Bruce is hands down the kookiest version of Bruce, as if you thought that there was a possibility for me to be kookier. But it is. And maybe you don't like it. Maybe this is the last time you're going to listen to my show until the preseason starts again. Well, if that's the case, you're going to miss out on some stuff. But also, that's the way the cookie crumbles. I'm Bruce Nolan, Buffalo Rumblings.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.